Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Let's continue the Titans conversation by going to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcoming in our friend Easton Freeze of A to Z Sports. Easton, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good to hear from you.
Yes, thank you for joining us as always. All right, Easton, this first question will set up my next question. So here's the first question. Based on your intel, how do you expect the first three picks of the NFL draft to go next week?
Well, the first one's real tricky, but I think Fernando Mendoza is going to be a Raider.
Quite a limb you're on there.
Quite a limb, but I'm going to stake my reputation on it. At number two, this is a thing that has changed in the past 10 to 14 days, right? We spent a lot of the draft season assuming that David Bailey would be on the board past two because Arvell Reese would be who the Jets took at two. But now that seems to have flipped. And what I'm hearing is that front offices around the league have been operating for a matter of weeks at this point under the assumption that the Jets will be taking David Bailey and letting Arvell Reese fall to whoever may take him after that. If that's not the case, and I only mention that because every Jets beat writer in the world still seems to be clinging to Arvell Reese as the guy at two, which I find interesting. And I think it's also fair to point out the last 2 years with the Jets in particular, the draft night betting favorite for them has been somebody that was on the board for them and they passed on them to take somebody else. So we've been wrong about the Jets recently for whatever reason. Maybe their front office just really enjoys fooling everyone.
And you got to have the Jets fans at the draft booing the Jets pick. That's just part of the tradition of the draft. Well, you got to have that.
That's right. They don't have to worry about that because they will boo no matter what. The assumption there is David Bailey, and that's what I think is going to happen. But I'm leaving that open just a little bit. I'll leave that door ajar. At three, this is where it gets really tricky because the Cardinals – my understanding is that the Cardinals want a tackle. Like, ideally, they would just like to take a tackle and move on with their lives. And that's not something that they see a lot of value in doing at three. And I think that they're right to not see that value. And so they're the number one team that I think potential trade-up candidates are calling. And I wouldn't rule out teams like the Cowboys or the Saints there are a couple of teams right in there that could move up, but really those are the first two that come to mind for me. And if they come up, it would be for Arvell Reese, I'm assuming. Now, there's been some rumors today about the Cowboys in particular being in love with Sonny Styles, the stand-up linebacker of Ohio State, and maybe they trade up for him. I can't tell you the last time we saw somebody trade up into the top 10 from outside the top 10 for a middle linebacker. Maybe old man Jerry is the first one to go off the beaten path on that, but we'll see. I think that any team that trades up is going to be coming for Arvell Reese, and that would be a three. And if the Cardinals can't find a trade partner there, it's either going to be Reese or Jeremiah Love, and I think Reese makes more sense for them. And so I'll say, to answer your question in the longest possible winded way, the most likely outcome in the first three picks is Mendoza, Reese, and Bailey are all off the board.
All right, so let's operate under that assumption. If Jeremiah Love is available when the Titans are picking at number four, if you had to bet on the Titans picking Love or trading down, where would you lean right now?
I would place a comfortable, sizable bet on Jeremiah Love between those two options. And that's not because I think the Titans don't want to trade down. I think that they would entertain trade down opportunities in this scenario. But I just don't see, again, if we're assuming that both of those top two edge rushers are off the board, the only possible trade down scenario I can see at this stage is that the Cowboys really are in love with Sonny Styles, and Sonny Styles has been mocked a lot to the Giants at five, and that's who they seem to be in love with, if you trust the insiders up there. And so if they want to jump the Giants to get Sonny Styles, again, it would be a recently unprecedented move by Jerry to come up for a middle linebacker, but maybe that's what happens. Otherwise, I just don't see the avenue for them to find a trade down partner. And I do think that Love is the most likely pick there if both of those edge guys are gone.
I'm with you, Easton. I've I think if indeed they do stay at that four, then Love would be the pick for me. But what do you think it will take for the Titans to move off that for that fourth pick? Because to me, I've said that if you want to come up that high, and there is a sort of a cap on these elite players in this year's draft, or you know, impact players right away on this in this draft, and if you move outside of that top five, you're not going to be able to get one of those guys. So if you want to move up this far, you got to give me at least, if you got two first round draft picks, and I'm thinking more so of Dallas, and I think Kansas City has two, but you have to give me both of them if indeed you want to move up into the top four, because what you're saying is you need an impact player. And there's not many in a draft. So if you want to move up, you're going to have to give me, you know, your first round picks for this season.
Yeah, obviously it depends on where you're going. But I'm in the same headspace that you're at. With Dallas in particular, to go from 4 to 12, which is what you'd be doing there, I would need 12 and 20, which is what Dallas has in the first round. Here's what's interesting to me, though. And again, this is speculative and it gets complicated because we don't know how the Titans have these guys stacked. But for a team like the Cardinals, for example, the reason why I think a trade down with them could make some sense is because if it's true that they want something that they feel like they can get by moving back three or four or five picks, and the value feels relatively the same to them, whether they're picking at three or at five or six or seven, I don't understand why more GMs don't take pretty much anything that's offered to them in that situation. The answer is pride and precedent, because historically speaking, no one's ever made a quote unquote cheap trade in the top 10. It's, you know, it's a top 10 pick. It has prestige. You have to get something notable for it. You've got to feel like you had the team trading with you mortgage their future to come get your pick. But if it's all the same to you and they're offering a free, you know, second and third round pick, I would just take the lashing in the papers the next day and accept the trade. I don't know if the Titans are in that spot or not, but if the Titans were offered something where they felt like they were getting relatively similar value with how they have it graded moving down to where they're moving to, and we know that Mike Borgonzi and Chad Brinker, you know, they came in a year ago and said, we want 12 top 100 picks in the next 3 years, and they're currently on pace to have nine of those. You got to add capital somewhere, and this is a valuable pick. And so I would entertain a trade that, you know, might not look like the greatest fleece of all time in the first round, if in fact you have these guys stacked relatively similarly.
Now, what do you make of the Reuben Bain information? Because obviously this is something, and it has come out, this is something that the Titans have known about, and basically the whole NFL has known about for months. Do you think this hurts him, or do you think eventually it's going to be more so the arm length than anything that hurts him and allows him to slide in the draft?
Yeah, if I'm being 100% honest, I kind of hate the timing of this story coming out. As you alluded to, those of us in and around the league have known this for some time, and I also hate that that was the way that it was reacted to. You know, myself included, everybody in the world who knew it came out and said this has been known for some time, and I guess we probably could have phrased it better, because everyone in the public's reaction was like, number one, you're not cool. And number two, why didn't you tell us? Which I understand. I think our point in mentioning that was not to be like, haha, we knew it before everybody else, but rather to be clear about this is not new to teams. If we knew it, teams knew it. And they knew it way before we did. There was a report from Nick Suss of the Tennessean that he heard from a source. The Titans were aware of it during background checks last summer. So they've known for it way longer than I or most folks in the media have known about it. How does it impact him? If I'm being cynical about it, I know that, you know, we reported A2ZSports.com. He is off of a couple of teams' draft boards, at least, that we know of, and that's sourced. I don't know whether or not he's off the Titans' draft board. I don't think that he is. I do think that he's not a guy that they're considering it for. Now, that becomes a different question if they move back to 8 or 10 or 12, and that's why I'm not sure whether or not he's off their board, because if they move back, maybe he is the best player, and they're willing to take that swing. But if you start to think about the Titans actually taking Bain at 8 or 10 or 12 or whatever it is, this is where it gets cynical, because we know where this organization is at right now. We know where they have been. We know that they are working really hard to, I don't want to say clean up their image, but you know, change the way that they're viewed in the public eye and rebrand and be this entity that people can wrap their arms around in the state of Tennessee. And I think that the actual incident might not be that big a deal to them internally, but they're no dummies, and they know what the PR is going to be for whichever team drafts him, right? Like, this is supposed to be the pinnacle of offseason hope, where every single team can strut out their first-round pick to the introductory press conference, and you can say, hey, we got a game-changing player that everybody loves. We're going to put him on every cup, coaster, and bar stool in the city, and this guy's going to be the face of the franchise for the summer because we're so excited to have this new elite player. And whoever drafts Ruben Bain, the reality is they're going to be behind the narrative eight ball immediately. They're going to have a lot of awkward situations and questions to be answered, and that narrative is going to dominate the beginning of his career. And I just don't know if the Titans have the stomach to sign up for that.
Easton Freeze is with us from A to Z Sports. Easton, Trevor Maddich always uses the phrase game wrecker or game breaker, depending on which side of the ball we're talking here. How many of those players are in this draft by your count?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, the obvious first person on that list is Jeremiah Love, because nobody has home run hitting ability like he does. True game wreckers. I mean, I think that David Bailey and Arnold Reese have the potential to become game wrecking defenders. So I'll lump them into that list. A quarterback that has top half of the league upside, like Fernando Mendoza does, you have to include him. So there's four. And then the list gets tricky, because Sonny Styles is, I've talked to some people that have been scouting linebackers intently for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And I've heard more than one of them say he's the best linebacker I've ever scouted, or he's the best linebacker I've scouted since Christian McCaffrey. That's how highly he is regarded by a lot of people. And so then you have to ask yourself, how game-breaking can a middle linebacker be? If you're Fred Warner, I mean, Fred Warner is a game-breaking player. So if he's Fred Warner, then he's a game-breaking player. But am I certain he's going to be, the 100th percentile of his potential? Definitely not. So I'd say that there are four or five, like, no-brainer can be a home run hitter guy in this draft. Now, every receiver in today's NFL can turn into that guy. But how do we find those guys in second, the third, and the fourth, and the fifth round. You get more diamonds in the rough in that way. So I'm sure there are a couple of those guys in there that we'll find, but you can't say that with certainty now.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a feel for how far you could trade down and still get a guy you feel like could be that much of an impact. And then the next level, of course,
my simple answer when you phrase it that way is if you trade down at all, like anywhere, I think that you are removing yourself from the tier of guys that is comfortably someone with game-breaking potential.
Okay, so you don't think you can slide down to 6 or 7 and feel good about it?
To me, it's a different tier of player, yes.
Okay, and then the next level would be, how many true first-round grades do you have? Because I hear a lot of people saying it's not 32. 32 will be drafted in the first round, but they won't all have first-round grades. So how do you quantify that?
Yeah, and full disclosure, I don't do letter grades on guys, but I know which guys I would feel comfortable taking in the first and those that I wouldn't. And I've also talked to a lot of folks that do the grimy grading system, like this, full-time scouting, and
right,
they have their number.
I guess the reason I'm asking is when you throw out the, hey, we'll give you four for 12 and 20, I think that's a huge part of that question, right, is what could you get at 12 and 20?
It totally is. And the funny thing about true first round grades, a lot of people, myself included, are like, well, that's strange, because have you ever heard of a single draft where, like, man, we've got 45 first round grades? It's never ever the case. It's like, there are only 23 first round grades in every single draft. Now, I do think this draft has less of them than the average draft. And what people mean when they say true first round grade is, like, a lot of teams have written out distinctions for what a first rounder is expected to be, what a second rounder is expected to be, right? And so a first rounder is expected to be a day one instant impact starter with superstar potential. And so if that's the rubric we're grading on, it's in the teens, right? It's like maybe 20 guys.
Easton Freeze of A to Z Sports has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Easton, thank you so much for your time. Excellent stuff as always. We'll probably catch up with you soon, before or after the draft. We'll find out. But enjoy the draft if we don't talk to you before that.
I'll talk to you guys then. I look forward to it.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction on what Easton had to say. But let's get back into the Predators. They were eliminated from playoff contention last night. Their loss to the Sharks plus the Kings win in Seattle eliminates the Predators from playoff contention. Willie and I were talking about this off air. I want to bring it on air. I'll tell you at the moment what my plan would be for next season, because I know all of you think of me as the blow it up guy, but I'm being realistic. And I'll tell you what I think they should do coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Yeah, I mean, it was, it was a lot of meaningful games, and that's what we want, right? Like, that's the games you want to play in, and that's why this hurts right now. You know, it sucks because we put ourselves in a position to play these games, and played really well the last couple games here, and put ourselves in a spot to go all the way till the end to make the playoffs, and that's why this one's is tough.
That was Roman Josi after the Predators lost 3-2 to the Sharks last night. Later in the evening, the Kings defeated the Kraken, eliminating the Predators from playoff contention. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We'll continue to take your reaction to a question I asked earlier, 615-737-1025. How confident are you in the future of the team after this season? And there is the variable of the new GM, I understand that. But how confident are you in the future of the team after the season? 615-737-1025.
I noticed you're still steering the conversation away from the fact that you jinxed the Predators
yes.
yesterday. And many of the Texans want an explanation.
Big jinx time the jinx. Predators.
Big yeah, you time did. Jinx. Yeah, you did.
I offered a fact.
Which
yeah,
but
you, it was
jinx.
The way
which
you
did jinxed it.
Exactly.
You emphasized it. You went overboard with your emphasis.
It was almost like you did it on purpose.
Yes.
I should.
I agree with you, D-Mace. He did it on purpose.
I'm not saying he did it on purpose, but it sounded like that.
But it did sound like he did it on purpose.
He said they've beaten him 15 times
hey, guys,
in a row.
Guys, just so you know. Willie
is exaggerating.
And there's no such thing as a jinx.
That was no such thing at all.
I should note. I should know.
Did you say that,
knows.
Adam? Everybody
knows
you
say
that.
True. That's what he said.
Adam, did you say that those words come out of your mouth?
I did mention.
No.
Hold on. I did mention that the Predators had defeated the Sharks 15 consecutive times. I did mention that.
And did you say there's no such thing as jinx?
Who's to say?
He did.
Who's to say?
We can check the tape if you need.
All I will say is that last night was the Predators' first loss to the Sharks since November 9th, 2019. Yep. That was before I was married and had two children.
Yep. Back on Celebrini was 12.
let's move to what I would do, because again, the new GM has some big decisions to make. And here is what I would do. And as I said before the break, I know all of you know me as the blow it up guy, but I'm also being realistic here. Realistically, the Predators can't blow it up because of the contracts that they signed. Many of their top players have no movement clauses in their contracts. So Philip Forsberg, Steven Stamkos, Roman Josi, Brady Shea, UC Soros, so on and so forth. If they want to be here, they're going to be here. So I am trying to be realistic. So here is what I would do if I were the new GM. And I think this could accomplish my goal. But here is what I would do. Any veteran player I can get rid of, I do. So for example, the notable UFAs that the Predators have on their roster are Eric Halla and Tyson Jost. See ya. Justin Barron is a restricted free agent. I would not qualify Justin Barron. See ya. I mentioned all of the players with no movement clauses. One of those players, Jonathan Marchessault, I would attempt to move. I think both sides would benefit from going their separate ways. Marchessault hasn't been a real fit here. I would move on from him. So any veterans I can remove from the roster, realistically, I would. And I wouldn't I would consider a Marchessault trade realistic. So any veteran I can move away from, I do. And I fill all of those spots with kids. As I've said, Willie, play the kids.
So you would not look at any veterans that might be an upgrade over some of the veterans you're moving on from?
I won't rule out
in a free agent situation.
I haven't looked at the free agent class. From what I understand, it isn't great.
No, it's not going to be great, I don't think.
Right. So I would fill all of those holes with kids. The Predators had been playing the kids.
They played a lot of the kids.
Yes.
And so I would ask you, what kids are you thinking?
So
because who's not there? There's a couple of guys.
It is a good question.
There's a couple of guys that I think are obvious
right.
in there, but I don't think they have five or six that are ready to
right.
jump in there.
So,
and then if you get that many, then your whole team is going to be rookies or second-year guys. I'm not sure you can win with that.
I think Scott Wheeler said last week that, hey, there are some of those prospects in your highly ranked prospect system who you need to find out if they can be useful NHL players. I'll give you an example. Fedor Svechkov. Fedor Svechkov just turned 23. He's played more than 100 games in the NHL. He's got 34 points in those 120-plus games. I want to see if Fedor Svechkov is a player who can be a useful player for this team moving forward.
Well, aren't they? They're already doing that, right?
But I would include more. So Tanner Molendijk, for example, David Edstrom, for example. I would fill the holes. I'm removing the veterans. I'm removing the veterans, and I would put kids in those spots to see if, hey, can these players be a part of the future? Because that is a major question for the new GM. Which young players will be meaningful parts of the future? So you've already got Matthew Wood and Joachim Kemmel, Reed Schaefer, Adam Willsby, Ryan Ufko. I throw Molendijk in there. I throw Edstrom in there. You know, you can name some other ones, Willie. I don't want to draw a blank right now. But this is my point. I would fill as many spots as I can with the young players and let them sink or swim a little bit. And what might happen is they may sink and the team by extension would sink and then you get a top pick. But my goal next season would be finding out how many of these young players, the ones we've seen in Nashville this season and others we haven't really seen, I would try to find out how many of them can be useful role players, secondary players, whatever word you want to use. I would see how many of them I can build with as the new GM. And if the team struggles, then I get what I want, which is a top pick. But I would not go out and like this past season when they brought back Eric Halla, they traded for Nick Hague, they signed Nick Perbix. I wouldn't do any of that. This offseason.
Nick Hague is only 26.
I understand your point, but he had been in the league for a little while.
Right, so what's wrong with that, though? If he's 26 he's played 5 years in the league. I think they missed him when he got hurt there at the end of the year. I do think that he's a guy that could be a solid player for them for a good while. I think he's in a different category than Eric Halla, who's 34, or going to be 35 next year. That's two different things,
right?
Not, a player that's in the mid-20s as opposed to the guy who's in the mid-30s.
Yes, I agree. Let me just verify something here. Nick Hague had played 364 games for the Golden Knights before joining the Predators. That's my point.
Like, that's good,
yeah,
right?
I'm not complaining about Hague specifically. What I mean is I am not going out of my way this offseason to find players such as Nick Hague or Nick Perbix. I'm looking to fill those spots. I mean, I'm not going to rule out signing a free agent, but I am looking mostly to fill those spots with the prospects. And let's see which of those prospects can hit it, which prospects show promise, which prospects fall off. And if the team sinks as a result, I think it's a fact-finding mission. Let's put it that way.
Okay, let me throw this angle at you here, because I would contend that they sort of did that this year.
I would lean into it more. You're right, they did do it after the deadline. I would lean into it more next season.
But I think there are guys that develop over the course of the season that maybe aren't ready at the beginning of the season. And even if they get off to a good start, sometimes they hit a wall, they might need a reset. Like even Matt Wood, who had a really good year. He is a big plus. Would you agree?
He showed flashes, definitely.
More than flashes. So like 17 goals at age 20 turning 21. That's notable. Even he had to get a trip back to the minors to get a reset. Came back and made some big plays and emerged at center. Like not every game was a gem.
Right. I'm not
but
sure.
But I think that's a guy that was up and down a little bit. I think some of the prospects, as much as you want to say play the kids, that may not be the best thing for every one of them. Some of them might need to play 20 games. They hit a wall. They need to go back, get some confidence, come back in. So that's where you need the Tyson Jost and some guys like that to fill. So roster flexibility, I agree with you, is probably something you would I think is what you're saying. Prior, don't block any kids that you want to see have a pathway get in there. I think that would be a reasonable thing to say.
Let's go to Ryan on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Ryan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
What's going on, guys? How are y'all?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Me personally, I think I'm with Adam. A rebuild in this town would not hurt at all. I would trade the veteran guys and get younger, get more speed and agility. You know, that's the new hockey game is speed. And we lack speed when we play these opponents like the Sharks, the Lightning, the Panthers. They're just so much faster than us. And, I mean, you might think I'm crazy, but I would trade Forsberg for a blockbuster deal and get younger players that are more skilled. I would trade, you know, Brady Shea is so overrated. He's gotten progressively worse. And then I would trade Roman Josi. You got to get younger. I mean, it's a young man's sport. It's not a veteran sport anymore.
Thank you for the call, Ryan. Now, if the Predators were to do that, then you're definitely rebuilding. Then you're definitely probably tanking if you're trading Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi. You're even one of them. But again, I hear what Ryan is saying. Thank you for the call, Ryan. I'm trying to be realistic. Like, I don't think it's realistic that Philip Forsberg is going to go to the new GM and say, get me out of here. Or Roman Josi.
It's not going to happen.
I'm not including that in my plan because it's unrealistic.
All right, so let's go specific at the center position, which is a really tough position to go out and get really good help. You're going to have to overpay to do it. They certainly have the salary cap space to go overpay for maybe a guy that's better than Arikala. Arikala, I thought, had a good year. Would you agree? I think when you look at Arikala's season, based on what you thought you were getting the day that they traded for him, Adam, I think there was a lot of complaining. Why would you want Arikala? I didn't think that they even traded him with the idea he would play every night at center. But if you told me over the summer when they traded for him, he's going to play basically every night at center and give you close to 40 points, I'd say, man, that's better than he had been in the year or two prior to that. I thought they got good mileage out of him. So I don't know if they have interest in bringing him back for one more year or not. But to me, if you're not having him, you're looking for somebody who's better. So, but you're saying play the kids. So tell me your four centers for next year. Like, I think O'Reilly.
O'Reilly would be the number one center.
Unless they trade him in the summer, right. And that's going to be talked about, I'm sure, right?
Yes, we will discuss that, I'm sure.
He's got 1 year left.
Let's assume that he's on the team right now.
Okay, so there's one spot.
Yes.
Matt Wood.
Mm-hmm.
Svechkov.
Edstrom, or Brady Martin, if you think he's ready.
Okay, so those are two great ones there. Edstrom and Brady Martin, two high prospects. Martin being probably the number one prospect, but he's going to be the youngest. He's 19, and Edstrom will be, I think, 21 next year. Still very young. Didn't tear it up this year in the AHL, but he's a bigger guy.
Edstrom is 21.
He's just turned 21. Okay, so would you not maybe prefer to have a veteran placeholder in there in the mix to help? That's awfully young. Like to think all those guys are going to play every game. That's why Holla was valuable on this team, is that he was a support. So maybe you have a Holla type of guy that can move over to play wing if Edstrom and Brady Martin are ready. That, to me, these are the decisions that I'm looking at. and you're asking yourself, okay, what kind of team am I having? Does that give me enough to get back to the playoffs? Or am I just going to say, play the kids even if they're floundering and drowning because we're going to lose? And that will get me maybe a number one center with a high first round pick. These are the tough calls.
But so what names would sort of fill that void? You're saying, well, we need to make a trade, or we need to go out and get, if we yeah. don't retain Holla, we need to go out and get someone with Holla-like ability or even better.
Yeah.
Okay, well, who is out there? Who do you trade for?
People aren't going to be really excited to trade you a good center without it costing you, because there's probably a few teams that have a surplus of centers, but not very many. So this is, again, where a deep prospect pool can help you and all the picks they have. So let's throw you a second. Let's throw you a third and throw in this prospect. And then maybe that gets me something that's a little bit better and younger than an Eric Halla, for example.
My ultimate aim here, if I'm the new GM and I'm enacting this plan, it's me, Adam, being the new GM. My plan would be, all right, I'm going to put as many of the young prospects in my highly ranked pool in the NHL as I can. Let's see which ones sink. Let's see which ones float. You've got the veteran core still, because again, I'm being realistic. I assume you still have O'Reilly and Stamkos and Forsberg and Yossi and Shea and all of those players. You see who sinks or floats. It's a fact-finding mission. You may find out, hey, Fedor Svechkov, for example, he may not have a future here in Nashville. But you learn that. I'm just picking Svechkov off the top of my head.
He's a guy that, to me, could go in any number of directions. And they signed him for a very economical price, right?
Right.
It's not going to cost you a whole lot.
So you find out about other players. And if the team struggles, you may put yourself in position to draft that superstar prospect that is missing from your highly touted pool. So that would be my plan. 615-737-1025. Am I nuts? Let me know. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction. We'll wrap up the show next. We'll get back into the breaking news that happened right when we came on the air as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. JD from Nashville says, you're spot on, Adam. I've promoted you to GM. Let's do this. I mean, I can move up a couple of tax brackets. I wouldn't mind that. I don't think I'm qualified for the job, however. A lot of great discussion today on the Predators. We'll continue to talk about the Predators offseason in the coming days and weeks. Of course, the big news we're waiting for, who will replace Barry Trotz as GM, because that will have a major influence in all of this. But the other breaking news in the world of sports, which broke right before we came on the air, the story that has captivated the sports world, Diana Russini and Mike Vrabel. Right before we came on the air, the Associated Press reported that Diana Russini has resigned from The Athletic. Russini has since made this announcement herself, posting her resignation letter on X. Here is part of what that letter said. Quote, I have covered the NFL with professionalism and dedication throughout my career, and I stand behind every story I have ever published. When the Page Six item first appeared, The Athletic supported me unequivocally, expressed confidence in my work and pride in my journalism. For that, I am grateful. In the days that followed, unfortunately, commentators and various media have engaged in self-feeding speculation that is simply unmoored from the facts. That's a good word.
Unmoored.
Moreover, this media frenzy is hurtling forward without regard for the review process The Athletic is trying to complete. It continues to escalate, fueled by repeated leaks, and I have no interest in submitting to a public inquiry that has already caused far more damage than I am willing to accept. Rather than allowing this to continue, I have decided to step aside now before my current contract expires on June 30th. I do so not because I accept the narrative that has been constructed around this episode, but because I refuse to lend it further oxygen or to let it define me or my career, end quote.
That last part I find to be the key. That's what struck me about it, is she appears to be in that statement. I don't pretend to know what it's like in her household, her world, mm-hmm. her family, and what her inner circle is telling her. But it would seem to me that if she is sticking to her story, which that statement would indicate that she is, that, hey, the facts are that I've stayed professional, mm-hmm. I stand by my stories, etc., that the nature of this story, I don't know that you could really avoid the firestorm, the yo-yos on social media who don't know one way or the other what happened or what didn't happen. They see a picture and they're going to jump to conclusions. Even members of the media, some have more restraint than others. You know, there are certain types of people that you will see on social media that really don't care one way or the other if they're right or not. They're just going to fuel the speculation, go, why? I feel like she's referring to those types in that. But I think she knows as well as anybody, you can't avoid that, right? That's going to happen whether you resign or stick it out. So for her to resign, her goal has got to be to get back into this game somewhere, right? Is that the best pathway, or would she have been better off just sticking to it, taking the heat, and continuing to push forward her version of the truth and say, look, I'll have to take it, but I feel like I've stayed professional in this. If that's her story, it saddens me that she turned in the resignation to stop it.
Yeah, and it's not going to stop. I think it is going to fuel even more. And again, I look at that part as I'm the victim here, so I got to step away because y'all are infringing on my privacy. No, we're not. Your privacy somehow, some way got put in our face, you know, and it seems like it was done on purpose. And again, I'm with you. If you didn't do anything, then why are you walking away from your job with 2 or 3 months left? Why? Because you don't want anybody to talk. They're going to talk about you anyway. There's going to be stories about you anyway. If I didn't do anything, I'm standing firm in my truth, and I'm keeping my job. And y'all going to say what y'all going to say anyway. So I'm going to keep my job. This sounds like, to me, that there was an ultimatum that either you leave or we're done. That's what it seems like to me, because nobody on that athletic side said we wanted her to leave. They didn't put out a we are severing the relationship between Diana and I and us as a company. They didn't come out with that. She did. Again, which tells me that somebody said in that house, and I would be surprised if she's in it like she has been as far as the sport. I would be surprised if there was something going on, if there were, because we don't know, it was just pictures out there, but if there was something going on, I would be surprised if her significant other says, oh, you can go back in that world again. I would be surprised.
Well, she said public inquiry, right? So she's concerned, I'm sure, that there'll be other little things that are
brought out. But whether you're
in
it or not, they're going to say what they're going to say regardless.
I think that's the dilemma, right? And only she knows what happened.
Well, Vrabel.
And Vrabel, right? Yes. And that Vrabel's another part of this. So I do think that Vrabel, his just blow-off in his statement, which was basically, hey, this is nothing. It doesn't deserve our time. These are two friends hanging out. That's going to be tested now. If now that she's resigned, he should have to answer some more questions too, right?
Yeah.
We know how that's probably going to unfold. But for her, I do. Only she knows what actually could come out because she knows the truth.
Exactly.
Chris on our text line says, "Pictures don't lie. Keywords are, I'm not going to let a public inquiry continue the issue." So she is walking away before the real truth comes out. Joey says they got caught. Who's going to admit to adultery in public?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like she walked away because she thinks that the longer she stays, more stuff will start to come out.
Right, but that's why they made the decision, both of them, to say that these pictures don't mean anything.
Exactly.
That was their story.
The issue.
So when you do that, I mean, if that's your truth, then stick by it.
Stand in
but
it.
But if that's not the truth, then we got a whole nother discussion.
The Athletic also did itself no favors by coming out forcibly defending Rossini.
And that's the first thing that she said.
Immediately. And then it was like, oh, we're going to review your stories and make sure that everything is kosher. You know, maybe do the investigation first before coming out and saying something. I don't think that went over well inside the Athletic, but
and where the friends, right?
They're where, are the friends?
Where are the friends at?
Where are the friends?
Because that was part of the story. Exactly. We were there with friends.
Where are the friends at?
I'm trying to keep my job. Friends, where you at?
You would think that with TMZ, you know, like, give me the friends. Give me the pictures of the friends. Were we hiking? That's it. You need
were
that.
Were we all in the pool together? What were we doing?
That would make it look a lot better.
Would it be better if they showed Joey? You know, there's a picture of Joey with all of them? From Joey from Friends.
As Eli from Smyrna says, I mean, who doesn't hold hands with their bros in front of beautiful mountains? I mean,
I definitely do.
Derek may have done that this weekend when he was hiking the mountains. Who's to say? But that'll do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. We'll get back into the NFL draft. We'll continue the fallout from the Predators playoff elimination as well. But Predators fans, coming up next, the final edition of Smashville Live this season, live from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Our guy Max High Maintenance Hers is standing by, along with Fedor Svechkov and Joachim Kemmel. Enjoy. We will talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
He's the same guy that didn't know what.
Max
that
didn't know plane, what Fantasy Island
plane.
Is. The Blaine.
Yeah, he didn't know. I didn't know about that either.
Come on, Tattoo.
Come on, Tattoo. High maintenance. Well, as always, I love you. The team loves you. Hey, we'll be back tomorrow. You know, have a wonderful day.
You almost forgot your lines there.
Yeah, I almost forgot my lines right there. I've been gone too long. 2 days too long. No, but I love you. The team love you. Hey, don't you forget. You hear the song. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. See you tomorrow here, 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace. The plane.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.